relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to a very special one-on-one here on America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump and currently member of the National Security Education Board. For those of you unfamiliar of what I did prior to my time in the White House or as a radio host, my thing was strategy. I spent the better part of the 1990s and the aughts working national security issues, ending up as a professor of irregular warfare and counterterrorism in the Department of Defense at National Defense University and then at the Marine Corps University. Spent a lot of years working with our guys in Bragg, teaching as a guest lecturer on the Q course, which is the qualification course for the Green Berets. That is why our next guest for one-on-one, well, this could very dangerously become more than just 1 hour chatting with him. He is Toby Harnden, and he's the author of a book called First Casualty, The Untold Story of the CIA Mission to Avenge 9/11. Toby, welcome to One on One.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. Great to be with you.
So you have kind of reinvented yourself in the last year or since this book came out. I see this very, very nicely curated posts on Instagram elsewhere with these iconic photographs from the battle zones, from the mountains of Afghanistan, where you're taking a snippet of this incredible story and illustrating an individual, an event. Let me start with the big picture.
Yeah.
So I came to this issue of the GWAT as a guy who'd done counterterrorism stuff. I was in the reserves in the British Territorial Army, then worked at the RAND Corporation on Al-Qaeda issues. And then I looked at this question of insurgency and counterinsurgency, foreign internal defense, as Bragg calls it. And I was convinced of the following. For all the weaknesses of the last 21 years, what America, with a very select number of allies and locals, did in the October of 2001 was absolutely incredible. In terms of small footprint, special operators, paramilitaries, with a tiny investment of manpower, creating a strategic effect, should be a case study of how it's done. And I think your book shares that analysis.
I think in a way it is that case study. I agree with you absolutely. I mean, this is a period in time when we had hundreds of Americans on the ground.
Yeah, a handful.
Yes. Not the 100,000 we had a decade later. And they were CIA paramilitaries, CIA case officers, Green Berets, US Air Force combat controllers, and they were working by, with, and through.
Which is the phrase, if you're not familiar. This is the, you know, the Green Berets, the in-theater, irregular warfare, by, with, and through, is how you look at the locals.
That's right. By, with, and through the indigenous allies. And the indigenous allies were the Northern Alliance in the north, a few Pashtuns in the south, who were the resistance to the foreign invaders. The Americans weren't the foreign invaders. I mean, my sort of contention really is that there wasn't an American invasion of Afghanistan until 2002. The foreign invaders were the Arabs of Al-Qaeda, and that's who the
Foreign fighters,
yeah,
if you would.
Yeah, yeah. So there were no very, very few Afghans in Al-Qaeda. They were mostly Arabs. I mean, one of them in the book was John Morkelin, who was an American from
the Africa, from the American Taliban.
That's right, who was actually Al-Qaeda. I mean, it wasn't an American fight. It was an Afghan fight resisting, as I say, these foreigners from Al-Qaeda who were being harbored by the Afghan stroke Pakistani Taliban regime. And it was incredibly successful. Now, it was limited success. I mean, it's easier to topple a regime than to replace it. But it's a heroic moment in American history.
Well, let's just immediately jump to today. We have 180,000, 190,000 troops deployed by Russia, and they don't managed to topple Kiev, which was the plan, a regime change, in 4 weeks. This was a couple of weeks with 200 guys.
Right.
So the comparison is quite shocking.
Yeah.
All right, so tell us a little bit, before we get into these amazing stories, Mike Spann, David Tyson, John Walker Lind, who is Toby Harnden? Tell us about what you did in the British Armed Forces and your life as a journalist before you became an author.
Yes, well, you know, we share a somewhat similar accent as listeners and viewers will detect.
You still got yours. Mine's kind of rubbing off a little bit. But I don't know. I'm worried. I'm worried about mine getting a little bit Americanized. But I try.
Yeah. You're a bit soggy in the middle of the Atlantic somewhere.
Yeah, I'm in the Azores.
So, yeah, I grew up, you know, I'm 56 years old. I was born in 66. My father was in the Navy. We moved around. We sort of ended up in Manchester, you know, industrial city in the Northwest.
Lucky you don't have a Mancunian accent.
No,
that
kind of went. I think the Royal Navy actually did for the Mancunian accent, which was pretty skin deep anyway. But, you know, I sort of, you know, I wanted to follow in my father's footstep, I guess, as so many sort of young men do. And I also wanted to get out of Manchester and see the world. And it just seemed like a very kind of, you know, insular sort of small sort of place. And so, you know, all that teenage angst was just channeled towards, you know, working hard to get out. And so I got a sponsorship from I joined the Navy at 18.
Wow.
Went to Dartmouth, which is the Britannia Royal Naval College, kind of the equivalent of the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis, but not really, because it's more basic officers training.
It's like Sandhurst, it's shorter.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was there for less than a year. And through the Navy, I got a sponsorship to Oxford to study modern history. So I went off whilst a serving naval officer, although I barely wore the uniform for those years, apart from, you know, a few months sailing around sort of Hong Kong and the Far East and Australia. So I had some good times.
Hardship tours.
Yes, exactly. So I was serving naval officer for 3 years at college, and then graduated from college and was pitched in to a career, which I enjoyed immensely. But, you know, it was after the Falklands War, which was 1982. So I was applying to join just sort of join the Falklands, actually, at age 16. But, you know, I missed that. I was stationed in Scotland for the Gulf War. Tried very hard to get involved. They managed to...
That's a long way away from Iraq.
I know. They managed to win it without... needing my services. And I remember my boss at the time said, listen, Toby, don't worry about it. There's going to be plenty of time for medals.
Lots of wars.
And I remember thinking, no, there won't. And of course, I left after 10 years service without a single medal.
Well, there was only 100 days to the Iraq War. It was literally 100 days.
Yes, exactly. And nobody killed from the Royal Navy, which was good. But, you know, in terms of even comparison with the Falklands, it was sort of a blip. And the Cold War was over. And so, you know,
the transition to journalist, how did that happen?
So I sort of had itchy feet and I thought I'd get my adventure sort of elsewhere. And interestingly, it was a Royal Air Force officer who was a public affairs sort of reservist, who was the night news editor for a newspaper called The Daily Express, a guy called Gordon Ducker. And he said, you know, best advice is Max Hastings, now famous historian.
Legendary military historian in the UK.
He was the editor of The Telegraph and actually famous for being a war reporter in the Falklands War, and sort of the first man into Port Stanley. And he was very interested in the services. And so Gordon said to me, you know, why don't you try the Telegraph? Get your foot in the door there. And so that's what I did. And that led to, you know, sort of, I don't know, 17, 18 years at the Telegraph. Northern Ireland, which was my big break. And then I was sent to Washington. I was in Washington, D.C. on 9/11, which was really the genesis for this book.
But lots of other places as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, all over the place. Then I switched to the Sunday Times. I got it was interesting how you sort of talked about reinventing myself. That's somewhat true. I mean, I got sort of sidelined, is how I look at it, really, into covering American politics, which, you know, was great fun and very interesting, but to me...
It's not your bag.
I think my real passion is sort of, you know, war and terrorism and the military and out at the sort of the sharp end. And so that's what sort of came together with this book.
And why the choice to focus on this period in First Casualty? Why did you choose these battles?
Well, 9/11. I mean, I was in D.C., you know, walking to work that morning, and the world changed for me, like everybody else. I vividly remember the news of Mike Spann being killed, CIA officer, paramilitary officer, former Marine Corps officer, and his name was released to the public, which was very unusual. And I remember being fascinated by this guy. You know, how did he end up there? What was he? And his widow, Shannon Spann, who was also a CIA officer, delivering, you know, a beautiful eulogy in December 2001 at Arlington.
We will dive into that story because so many of the things Toby covers in this book really haven't been given a requisite attention. And I think we've kind of fallen into, I don't know, it's not a forgotten war, but really not enough is still being said about the last 20 years, the failures and the successes. It's called First Casualty, The Untold Story of the CIA Mission to Avenge 9/11 by Toby Harnden. You can follow him on social media at Toby Harnden and TobyHarnden.com. If you enjoy listening to these 101 deep dive interviews as much as we love making them, don't forget to subscribe. Please go to Spotify, punch in my name, Sebastian Gorka, write us a little review, send the links around to your friends, and you will guarantee that you never miss a single one. If you haven't done so already, be sure to register for our Stand With Israel tour 10 days later this year with my colleague, my Salem superstar Dinesh D'Souza and his lovely wife Debbie. We will be going and walking in the Holy Land where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. Even if you've been to Israel before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. We're going to go to the places that you've read about. The shores of the Sea of Galilee, the Temple Mount, the Garden of Gethsemane. Register today, even if you've been before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. That's StandWithIsraelTour.com or call 855-565-5519. That's 855-565-5519. StandWithIsraelTour.com. Join us. You won't regret it. Mike Lindell has a true passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. Therefore, he created the Giza Dream bed sheets. They look and feel incredible, which translates to an even better night's sleep for you. Mike's latest amazing deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you will receive 60% off the Giza Dream sheets that come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. You'll receive a full set for as low as $39.99. And for a limited time, with any purchase, you'll receive Mike's soft cover book free when you use promo code GORKA. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code GORKA. Along with this offer, you'll also get deep, deep discounts on all his MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-829-8468, promo code GORKA. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA. You mentioned this story, the prison uprising, Mike Spann, a former Marine, CIA paramilitary. For those who know nothing, give us the story of that incredible event and what that man did.
Yeah, I mean, it is incredible. And so, November the 25th, 2001, two CIA officers walk into this fort called Kala Jangi, which means literally like Fort of War, outside Mazar-e Sharif. Now, backing up a little bit, Mazar-e Sharif had fallen to Northern Alliance forces, aided by
our allies.
Our allies, aided by the CIA and Green Berets and Air Force combat controllers and the awesome might of US air power overhead on November the 10th. Now, less than a month earlier, Mike Spann had been one of eight CIA officers who landed in the Dariusuf Valley aboard two Black Hawk helicopters that had flown in from Kashi Karnabad, K2, a former Soviet airbase that the Uzbekistan government had given over to the Americans for this post-9/11 mission. So October 17th, 2001, they land, dropped into the unknown. First Americans behind America.
So we are barely a month out since 9/11.
Yeah. First Americans behind enemy lines. Now, there had been a CIA team called Jawbreaker that had landed in the Panjshir Valley on September the 26th. But that was, you know, relatively speaking, safe territory controlled by the Northern Alliance. But this was enemy territory, yeah. Taliban-controlled territory. So eight of them, four of them were paramilitaries. One of those was Mike Spann.
So when paramilitary is somebody who's been seconded usually from the military and is working in the CIA using their skills for the CIA.
Yeah, usually they're actually in the CIA. Sometimes they're contractors or people who've been seconded.
Yeah.
And on some of the other teams, they were actually serving members of the Delta Force and SEALs. But these were the four paramilitaries on Team Alpha were serving CIA officers, Special Activities Division. Scott Spellmeyer, who's on the cover of the book, he was later became very senior. He was the senior CIA guy on the National Security Council during the Trump administration. He became station chief in Kabul, but then a young officer, but already battle hardened. He'd been wounded in the Battle of Mogadishu in Somalia in 1993. There's a guy called Alex Hernandez, who was the deputy chief, who was a sergeant major, gone full career in special forces and then joined the agency. And two case officers, J.R. Seeger, who was the chief, who'd worked with the CIA out of Islamabad in the 1980s against the Soviets, for the supplying Stinger missiles to the Mujahideen. And David Tyson, who you mentioned at the beginning, who was with Mike Spann on November the 25th, 2001.
So they're in unfriendly territory. Yeah. This is the Ford of War. Walk us through that event.
Yeah. So David was a case officer based in Tashkent and spoke Uzbek almost fluently. And so he's the linguist, the main linguist on the team, although J.R. Seeger also, he spoke Dari, which was the sort of lingua franca in Afghanistan. But on that day, the team split. There's a big fight 100 miles to the east, expected in Kunduz. So the bulk of American forces are there. But the night before, 400 Al-Qaeda prisoners had arrived on the eastern edge of Mazar-e Sharif to surrender. And it was extremely murky why they were there. They should have been surrendering in Kunduz. And basically, I mean, what I was able to establish, you know, almost beyond doubt, is that this was a Trojan horse operation. It was a deliberate
trap.
Yeah, it was a Taliban Al-Qaeda operation to pretend that these 400 fighters had surrendered, but in fact they remained armed. They sort of exploited Afghan custom to keep their weapons with them. And they were planning an uprising, which they
because you can have lots of people surrender at once if it's a regular army. During the Gulf War, we had thousands of Iraqis surrender at once. When it's irregular fighters, you don't usually get hundreds of them surrendering at the same time.
Right.
Right? So it's a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, there were factions within there, and, you know, but most of them were there to die, you know. And so the Northern Alliance fighters, the Uzbeks and Tajiks, were terrified of them. And also there was an Afghan custom of sort of honor in surrender where you just put down your weapons and go home or take your weapons with you, but you wouldn't sort of fight. But these weren't Afghans.
Yeah.
So they were bundled into the fort on the night of November 24th, 2001, into a building called the Pink House, which is a Soviet-built sort of schoolhouse, but it had a fortified bunker sort of cellar beneath. And they were, which had been used to store arms and, you know, various, it'd be controlled by the Taliban, by the Northern Alliance, by the Soviets. And so these prisons were shoved down there. As they were going down there on the night of the 24th, there was a suicide attack. A grenade exploded, killed a couple of Dostum senior guys.
Who's the warlord?
Abdul Rashid Dostum was the main US ally that, you know, warlord from central casting, big sort of brutish character, notorious for switching sides, lots of blood on his hands. But, you know, he was our guy in 2001 and was a very effective fighter and was sort of revered by the CIA and the Green Berets. So this suicide bomber took out two of Dostum's commanders. It was a very kind of ambiguous situation. It was at dusk. It was very dangerous. And so they were shoved into this cellar. That night, you know, Mike Spann and David Tyson, who were two of the CIA officers from Team Alpha who were left behind while the bulk were spread out elsewhere, they spoke to Hank Crumpton, who was the CIA officer.
Big cheese.
Yeah, he was the deputy to Kofa Black, who was the head of the counterterrorism center, sort of another legendary figure. But David spoke to Hank Crumpton, and, you know, you have to remember what the atmosphere was like in 2001. I mean, we'd just been attacked, 3,000 killed in New York and at the Pentagon and in
Pennsylvania.
The Flight 93.
Shanksville.
Yeah, they were the first Americans who fought back. Yeah. And Americans, I mean, certainly they wanted, you know, we wanted vengeance, but we wanted to stop the next attack. We wanted to take the fight to the enemy. And, I mean, these forces were in Afghanistan very quickly. And this was not an environment which you could wait until perfect conditions. And so David and Mike went into that fort to do an initial sift, kind of interrogation, questioning of the prisoners on that morning, knowing that it was a very dangerous situation.
All right, we're going to find out what happened to CIA Officer David Tyson and Mike Spann momentarily. In the meantime, you've got to get this book. You won't regret it. It is First Casualty, the untold story of the CIA mission to avenge 9/11 with Toby Harnden's how many interviews?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Lots.
Many, lots and lots. I think I did 327 hours of interviews.
300, okay. There you go. You go. He's got the figures and he's got the receipts. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One on One. Dear friends, if you want to celebrate your values, if you are America First all the way, check out our website. It's sebgorkastore.com. The most popular item right now is the Zelensky t-shirt. It's his response to President Biden when Biden said, I'll get you out of there. I'll send you a plane. You can run away and hide. And he said, I don't need a ride. I need ammunition. Check out all the gear, including the Let's Go Brandon. It's all made in America. sebgorkastore.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorkastore.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Okay, Toby, you left us in the fort of war. The paramilitaries are split up. Lots of fighting going on elsewhere. David Tyson is there. They've been in touch with Kofa Black. You've got Mike Spann as well. What happened in the rest of the story of the prison outbreak?
So they go into the southern half of the fort. It's divided by a sort of east-west wall with a gateway in the middle. And the Uzbek intelligence officers and Tajik intelligence officers working for Dostum are already bringing the prisoners out in sort of ones and twos from this cellar. And they're lined up, in long lines with their hands tied behind their backs, pretty loosely, really, mostly by their own turbans. And there's video footage of this that was shot.
They're tied with their own turbans.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Not the securest form of prisoner handling, in my experience, as a former prisoner handler in the intelligence corps.
You know, it's one of those what-ifs. If they'd had a big box of zip ties, the whole history could have
changed.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Right.
And so David, who speaks Uzbek, a number of Central Asian languages, and, you know, was a former academic, it's like the sort of, it's the peak of his sort of life in a way to be able to put those languages and all that cultural experience to use in the defense of his nation.
Yeah.
And so he's questioning, trying to work out there's goofy stuff. Some of them are saying they work for Mossad, they work for Al Jazeera, they work for the CIA. I mean, there's lots of kind of
get out of jail free card
attempts.
Right.
But there's also a lot of truth. There are people talking about training with Al-Qaeda, meeting bin Laden, been trained in sort of biological and chemical agents. And so there's a lot of talking going on, and David is conferring with the Afghans about, who's a foot soldier, who might be a commander. Mike, no languages, but, this burning... Mike Spann was almost, I think, the personification of America after 9/11. With us or against us, take the fight to the enemy. He really wanted to be there, and he had this sort of like burning desire to get to Al-Qaeda. And these were the first Al-Qaeda prisoners questioned by Americans after 9/11.
So what went wrong? What happened?
So around 11 a.m., they're just about to starting to think about wrapping up. And David, I've talked to, endlessly about this. He had this sense of this is just overwhelming. There's so much intelligence value here. And two men can't deal with it, and they need to be split up. Then there needs to be FBI flown in. You know, there needs to be sort of rigorous and kind of methodical interrogations. Just as he's thinking about, you know, withdrawing for the day and him and Mike getting out, there's a sound, and it's on video, although it cuts at the moment of the uprising, of shouting, some explosions and gunfire, and there's a point on the video when there's an Uzbek prisoner that's coming out, and then he kind of turns around and you can see it. That's the start of the uprising. And so basically what happened was Mike Spann, and you can see it's eerie on the video, seconds earlier he just walked away from that where that prisoner was, and had walked over to a medical point with two Afghan doctors who I interviewed in 2020, still alive miraculously. They were treating some of the Al-Qaeda prisoners. Mike was walking over towards them to try and find some English speakers. He'd already spoken to the man who subsequently became known as the American Taliban, John Walker Lind. But Mike was very close to the Pink House, and the prisoners came rushing out. They overpowered the guards, killed them, and Mike had a Kalashnikov on his back, and he swung it round and shot several of them as they were running towards him. Unfortunately, the prisoners who were tied up with their turbans were getting up, and they rushed him from behind. And so he pulled out his Glock pistol, took out a couple of them, and disappeared underneath this pile of bodies. David Tyson, who was, I don't know, 75 yards away, you know, he hears this commotion, and he immediately goes into almost a sense of sort of psychological shock, like time slowing down, losing his hearing, you know, a real, like almost sort of transformative
experience. Yeah, the tunnel vision, time slows down, yeah.
But, you know, all his senses working overtime, he heard Mike shout, "Dave, Dave, Dave." And in that moment, you know, most of the Afghan guards, unfortunately, are running for their lives instead of fighting and trying to resist this uprising. And instead of running or just freezing or just sort of collapsing in a, you know, blubbering pile or whatever, David runs towards Mike. He pulls out his pistol. He had a Browning pistol. This prisoner comes towards him, firing a Makarov Russian pistol, trying to kill him. David shoots him twice, kills him, gets to Mike. There's all these prisoners grappling on top of Mike. David shoots the four on top of Mike. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. He shoots each prisoner twice. And then, you know, he's trying to establish whether Mike's alive. He kicks Mike. There's no movement. There's blood on the ground. And then at that moment, you know, I mean, there's no time to take a pulse or anything like that. David grabs Mike's rifle, because David didn't have a rifle with him that day. So David grabs Mike's Kalashnikov and fights his way out and kills, I don't know, dozens of Al-Qaeda prisoners.
And that is why Toby Harden has written this book. You must read it, First Casualty, the untold story of the CIA mission to avenge 9/11. Follow him at Toby Harden. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating. Tens of thousands of Americans across the country, me included. If you've tried everything else and failed to find relief, you've got to try this 100% drug-free product. Order your three-week quick starter pack right now at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of the third week, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and thousands of your fellow Americans. Don't wait any longer. Call 800-500-8384. That's 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. Tell us, Toby, after that story, what happened to David Tyson after the attempt to rescue Mike Spann?
So David manages to fight his way out of the southern compound. He has grenades bouncing off him that don't explode. He has people...
And he was there originally with just a pistol, just a handgun.
Yes, yes. He has Al-Qaeda fighters who were still still tied up, flinging themselves at him, trying to headbutt him. He's shooting them over his shoulder, shooting them in the head, shooting them at very close range. I mean, at any point, you know, he's just waiting for sort of curtains. I mean, I don't know what his chances of survival would have been, but... 5%, 10%, very slim. So he miraculously manages to make it through the gate into the northern compound, and he makes his quick calculation. He could have gone for the main gate, but he thought Al-Qaeda might already be there. He'd probably be killed. So he goes to the headquarters building, which was the sort of office sort of complex at the top of the fort, and decides that's the place. He knows the layout. There are lots of rooms in there. And so he runs there. And there was a German TV crew that happened to be there that day, and they caught footage of him running across the compound with a Kalashnikov in one hand, a pistol in the other. He's wearing this sort of amalgam of Afghan gear and American gear. And that in a way, when I first saw that footage in Iraq in 2004, oddly enough, someone showed it to me, that was the trigger for this book. Because I was like, what did that guy go through?
Yeah.
You know, what had taken him to that point? Who was he? And what's life been like for him since? And I remember there's close-up footage when he burst into the building and his staring eyes, you know, the thousand-yard stare, and he's just been through incredible trauma and he's still got a lot to do. So basically, he raises the alarm. He calls his wife in Tashkent, his wife, Roseanne, who sort of drops the phone. eventually, he sort of, you know, picks it up again. She takes the notes and calls the station chief, Charlie Gilbert, in Tashkent. And, a rescue force is organized with 20 guys from at the Turkish school in Mazar-i Sharif. 8 of those are special boat service, Brits.
British, right.
Yeah, which was
Navy.
Which was another amazing
Marines.
Thing about the story.
Right.
The Brits were there. One of them was a SEAL, Steph Bass, who was a Navy SEAL, who was awarded a Navy Cross for his actions that day. There were Green Berets. Major Mark Mitchell was commanding it. And there was a CIA medic called Glenn, who is still serving, who performed field amputations.
Oh, that's the guy who used a multi-tool to remove somebody's foot?
Yes, that's Glenn. And the multi-tool is currently in the CIA
museum.
And Glenn is still working
as
a medic.
It.
It's clean. There's no blood on it. Okay. Unlike Trotsky's ice pit, which still got the blood on it, I think.
Did they rescue him?
So David, after about 5 or 6 hours, he's been knocked off his feet by American airstrikes. Coming in, he's shooting Al-Qaeda from the roof of the headquarters building through the gateway, which was sort of nicknamed the Fatal Funnel that day. And he eventually manages to, he helps some of the Red Cross workers and some of the German journalists and Afghans out. And he slipped over the back wall just as it was starting to get dark. And they all run across this field. One of the JDAMs misses the fort and lands pretty close to them. This huge explosion.
Danger close.
And
right.
Yes, exactly. And he catches a taxi. Well, he used his Kalashnikov to hail a taxi.
Taxi?
Yes. And they're driven back to the Turkish school in Mazar-i Sharif. And David at this point is kind of like a gibbering wreck,
right.
You know, because all the sort of shock is hitting him. But, you know, incredible heroism and fortitude. And David was awarded the Distinguished Intelligence Cross, which is sort of the CIA's equivalent of the Medal of Honor for his actions that day. But, you know, there was still another four or five days of battle. They had to recover Mike's body, and they had to stop these Al-Qaeda fighters breaking out of that fort and retaking Mazar-i Sharif.
Absolutely, you know, that is, I don't know what the phrase is in radio, but that is a page-turner of a story. That's why you have to read First Casualty. Let's pull up back to what we discussed at the beginning. That worked. You know, the leveraging of the Northern Alliance, taking down the Taliban with a few hundred operators worked. Then the whole thing changes into nation building, trying to finish the ring road that not even the Soviets managed to finish. and then we kind of lost the plot, did we not?
Yeah.
Toby, talk to us about the last 20 years in terms of that worked and that didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways we were sort of a victim of our own success, you know, and sort of, I don't know whether you want to call it, you know, the American can-do spirit, we can do anything, or hubris or arrogance or however you want to characterize it. But I think some of the lessons, that was very messy. I mean, Calajangi was very messy, a sort of fake surrender, unreliable allies, being double-crossed by Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. There was also a friendly fire incident where a 2,000-pound JDAM was dropped on a friendly position. So there's plenty of indications of, like, this is difficult, this is complex. And, you know, this is not going to be any sort of cakewalk, or that was the term that was used, I think, for Iraq. But in success, I think the policymakers in Washington were like, well, you know, we're, you know, the world's only superpower. You know, we can do this. We'll go into Iraq. You know, we'll change a regime there. And we'll just let the sort of Afghans in the State Department sort of work out, you know, the details. But, you know, it grew, as you said, from that limited mission into sort of nation building. You know, big army came in and huge supply lines and massive bases, and trying to refashion Afghanistan into this, you know, arguably not even really a nation, but into a sort of a democratic nation built on sort of based on Jeffersonian ideals.
In a land of 36 languages and 400 tribes.
Right. And, you know, David, you know, who knows Afghans, and JR, who knows Afghans better than anybody. I mean, I've talked to them about this, and David used this term, the layers of the Afghan onion. Mm-hmm. And he had this, the complexity and things not being what they seem, and even your allies just having a different, completely sort of different mindset. You know, hundreds of years of sort of brutality and constant sort of warfare. And he realized, I mean, he had this sort of realization 2 or 3 weeks into this, before they'd even got to Mazar-e Sharif, that he, you know, steeped in the languages and the culture of Central Asia, could spend several lifetimes trying to understand this place, and it wasn't going to work. So, you know, really tragic, I think, that instead of learning the lessons of this was a limited operation where you go sort of in and out and leave the Afghans to, you know, fashion their own country however imperfectly, we decided, no, we can Americanize the whole thing, and we can go for broke.
And then Biden just left it all. Dear friends, you know me, I'm skeptical by nature. So when I first heard about home title theft, I was like, is this a real thing? Can some cyber criminal really forge my name off the title of my home and take it over as a new owner? Well, it turns out he can. Real estate crimes and losses are rare, correct? Wrong. According to the FBI, this crime is growing faster than credit card fraud in America, and you are not covered by homeowners insurance or common identity theft programs. Home Title Lock earned my trust. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect anyone tampering with your home's title, they mobilize to help shut them down. Here's what I urge you to do. Number one, go to HomeTitleLock.com, read the testimonials from FBI agents and government officials. Number two, register your home address and see if you are already a victim of cybercrime that you may not even have known about. And when you want to protect your home, insert my name, G-O-R-K-A, to get the listener discount at HomeTitleLock.com. This is the most valuable asset you will ever own. You need to protect it. Don't wait another day. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and plug in G-O-R-K-A to make sure that the cyber criminals cannot get to your most valuable asset. HomeTitleLock.com, code Gorka. Dear friends, this show is not possible without those who support it. Great patriots like Mike Lindell. If you want to support us, support him. They have shut down 9 of his bank accounts because he's a conservative. The big box stores have also banned him. Go to his webpage, sebgorka.com, MyPillow.com. Use my name, Gorka, for up to 60% off his more than 150 products. That's MyPillow.com, 800-829-8468. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. Toby, last question. You assiduously said, I just want to talk about the book. I don't want to talk politics. Hopefully you won't see this as a political question. You have interviewed dozens of people, hundreds of hours of interviews. Wokery, allegedly, you know, if you want to use that phrase, wokery is out of control, whether it's at schools or in the military. My buddies brag, complain about it. Are you concerned, or have you heard from those you spoke to, that the capabilities that you've learnt about, that these people were able to deploy 20 years ago, are they in threat? Is the military able to still do these amazing kinds of missions?
I think they are. I mean, I think there's a lot of stupid stuff around, and there's a lot of kind of angst about it. I speak to members of Team Alpha, some of, you know, one of whom is still serving. A couple do contracting, and I speak to lots of, you know, serving special forces people, and they tend to be like, roll their eyes, and, you know, these things come and go. But what, you know, this is a depressing time, I think. You know, you mentioned the Afghanistan withdrawal. I mean, you know, you can just imagine how...
All the people who fought for Afghanistan, all the allies who helped us, the liaison services.
I mean, Shannon Spann, who, you know, I met actually with David Tyson a couple of days ago. You know, she's working sort of every waking hour to get Afghan allies out of Afghanistan now. And she's sort of, you know, devastated by what what happened last August and angry and dismayed. And so are the members of Team Alpha. But what I think is incredible about these people is how, rather than getting diverted into the stupid stuff, and they're angry and they're upset, and some of them have this degree of kind of mourning. They have to come to sort of terms with this because, you know, what did they fight for? But instead of kind of going down the sort of the rabbit hole or into a dark place on this, they channel themselves into getting things done.
Yeah, something productive.
Yeah, and so the work they've been doing on getting the Afghan allies out, the work they've been doing for organizations like the Third Option Foundation, which helps not only the widows and children, families of those who've been killed, but also serving personnel. I mean, they pay for counseling for them and, you know, all sorts of things. So it's about keeping the fighting force fit. So that's what these people are focused on. And I think it brings everything sort of full circle, because I think the spirit of 9/11, which is, you know, part of the spirit of America, that still sort of beats in their hearts.
Yeah.
And it's still there, even though there is a lot of silly stuff and ridiculous arguments and focus on things that are utterly meaningless, and peripheral.
Irrelevant.
It is still there.
All right, guys, we've literally just scratched the surface. The book is First Casualty, The Untold Story of the CIA Mission to Avenge 9/11. Toby Harnden is the author. You can follow him at Toby Harnden on all the relevant sites, and also his own site, tobyharnden.com. Dear friends, you've been listening to America First, one-on-one, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in, and stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream today.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Always worried about Mondays, slow news day, when I pick up Mona's newspaper every morning as I walk the dog. That's my elderly neighbor who I worry about, and I don't want her walking outside to pick up her Washington Post. When I pick it up for her and take it to her doorstep, it's like a leaflet on Monday. I guess the Washington Post doesn't work at the weekend and they think that news doesn't happen. But my, oh my, is it a heavy news day today. God bless every single one of you. Greetings, I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump, member currently of the National Security Education Board, and your host for the next 2 hours. We will be joined by superlative guests like John Solomon, Monica Crowley, Emma Jo Morris, the woman who broke the laptop from hell story for the New York Post, and then a special one-on-one on the CIA operation right after September the 11th in Afghanistan. We'll be talking to Toby Harnden, formerly of the Daily Telegraph and the Sunday Times. But first, what do you need to know that happened over the weekend from Friday to today? Well, we have Elon Musk becoming, I think, the largest shareholder of Twitter stock. 9.2%. I know, 4 weeks ago, I told him to buy Twitter. I think a lot of other people did too. Maybe this is the man who can take a controlling share of that cesspit and actually turn it into a social media platform and maybe even bring my old boss, President Trump, back. He's got his own thing now, Truth Social. But you never know. Maybe Elon could bring him back. We have, of course, President Zelensky addressing the Grammys with a pre-recorded message. We'll be sharing that with you. We have a shocking statistic. 101 officers shot this year alone, record-breaking figures. We have an arrest. It just broke as we were preparing to go live. One arrest has been made in the Sacramento shooting this weekend that killed 6 Americans and wounded so many more. We will be giving you clips, updates from what President Trump did at the weekend in Michigan. And then Obama's back in Biden's White House. He hasn't been there for a long, long time, but now he's going back. We'll tell you why. And then Sarah Palin. Being governor of Alaska wasn't enough. Looks like she's running for the House, for Alaska's seat in the House of Representatives. Is that a step down for her? Well, we'll discuss all that and so much more. Our phone number, 833-33-GORKA. That's 833-334-6752. Let's talk about the big news, the bad news. This is from the Daily Mail. Right now, the White House is holding a press conference on this issue, and that is the mass murders in Ukraine, in the suburb of Bucha. A mass grave containing the bodies of at least 20 civilians, including a mayor and her family, has been uncovered near the Ukrainian capital of Kiev. The pit was uncovered in woodland near the town of Motsizin, around 20 miles west of the city of Bucha, where another mass grave was found, which contains the bodies of local mayor Olga Sukchenko, who was buried along with her husband and son. This is according to Ukraine's former ambassador to Austria, Oleksandr Sherba. Miss Selenko's body had been rolled into the hastily dug pit alongside at least 19 others, including families, some of whose bodies showed the signs of torture. Shukchenko was found with her fingers and arms broken, according to the mayor of the nearby town of Kopiliv, where a resident of Motizin said Russian soldiers killed any Ukrainian officials who refused to collaborate. The mayor and her family had been reported by others as kidnapped by the Russians on March 23rd. This is the second mass grave to be uncovered behind the backs of retreating Russian troops after a 45-foot pit containing the bodies of at least 57 civilians was also uncovered in Bucha, a city on the outskirts of Kiev, where hundreds of civilians have been found dead. Now, maybe you had a busy weekend. Maybe it's not what you do at the weekend, and I don't blame you. But the footage is out there, not just of the mass graves, but of the areas around Kiev that were liberated by the Ukrainians. As they were liberated, body after body was found. Not of Ukrainian soldiers, not of members of some local militia or volunteers, but photographs and video footage of civilians of every age, of both genders, shot with their hands tied behind their backs. I'm disgusted I'm horrified by people who I follow on Twitter, who up to now seemed normal, seemed sane. People who say they're conservatives, and their first reaction is what? It's all a lie. The Ukrainians did it. One person, Ian, you know who you are, along with others, have said things like, well, you know, the Azov battalion was there a week ago. Yeah, in Russian-held territory. A Ukrainian battalion was there in Russian-held territory. Now, I don't care what your politics are, but to say Ukrainians bound and shot fellow Ukrainians, despite knowing the history of how Russians go to war, there is no excuse for that. You have not one scintilla of evidence. But what do we have in terms of evidence on the other side? How about 1956 in Hungary, the land of my parents? How about Czechoslovakia in 1968? How about Chechnya in 1999? How about South Ossetia? How about Georgia? How about Crimea? How many Russian atrocities? How about Katyn in 1941, where 20,000 Poles were killed by the Soviets, taken into a forest and shot because they were Polish, and dumped into a mass grave? How stupid or how vile are you? We have more than a century's worth of evidence of Russians committing genocide against civilians. Oh, but in this case, no, the Russians didn't do it. The Ukrainians did it to themselves. Wake up or shut your mouth, because you are helping the killers. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Subscribe to the podcast. Go right now to Spotify. Plug in my name, America First. Never miss a moment. You are listening to the Salem Radio Broadcast.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.